Hi, I'm Dr. Elizabeth Sanders, a foot and ankle surgeon and assistant professor at Boston University Medical Center.
Hi, I'm Katrina Sanders. I'm a registered dental hygienist, consultant, international speaker, and wine lover.
And we're sisters. I grew up looking up to my big sister, Katrina.
And now I look up to my lady boss, physician sister, Elizabeth.
Together, we are working to unite the dental and medical communities in unique and exciting ways.
Welcome to Floss and Flip Flops with the Sanders Sisters, our monthly podcast,
where we unpack all things health related from your mouth to your toes.
So grab your flossy floss
and slide on some flippy floppies.
And let's get on with the show. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Floss and Flip Flops with your favorite ginger sisters, the Sanders sisters.
The Sanders sisters.
Yay. Woohoo. Hi, happy Thursday, Doc.
Happy Thursday. It's so good to see your face. I've missed it.
Oh, you're so sweet. It's good to have a face to be seen.
And with.
It's a very weird way to set up this episode, which is actually talking about the importance of organ and tissue donation. Mm-hmm. So I'm so excited to unpack this episode. April is Organ and Tissue Donation Awareness Month. That's a mouthful.
Ooh-wee.
And so, yeah, holy cats. So I'm so excited to talk about this today. I know we spend a lot of time or we focus a lot of our podcast on wanting to support our colleagues in understanding the oral and systemic link. And so you'll learn throughout this episode why it's critical for us to take a pause and to really share about the importance around organ and tissue donation. So I wanted to begin by talking about what we know about organ and tissue donation and why it's really important. One healthy donor can actually save up to 8 lives through organ donation, and one donor can actually save 75 lives through tissue donation. And I know, Dr. E, we're going to walk through what all is donated in the process of organ and tissue donation. But currently, there are over 110,000 men, women, and children currently on the wait list waiting for organs. And tragically, about 22 people die each day sitting on the transplant list waiting for a life-saving organ. So it's I will front load this by saying this talk today is going to talk about, we're going to flip back and forth between, talking about what it would be like to provide care or what it is like providing care for a patient who is a recipient of an organ or tissues. But we're also going to thread through some of the key important components to know if you or a loved one are considering organ or tissue donation. Organ and tissue donation, by the way, you can also, we oftentimes think about organ donors or tissue donors as somebody who's deceased and now they are giving of their recyclable parts, so to speak. But I do also want to take a moment to acknowledge the vast majority of people out there who have volunteered as live donors. Mm-hmm. Really incredible stories. I'm sure you've seen them on social media, right? Of the people that have, given a kidney to somebody in need. And so it is possible to also be a live organ donor. I will front load this by saying, we acknowledge that there are spiritual or religious or cultural beliefs around organ and tissue donation, and we do not wish to be disrespectful or unkind of those pieces. You know, we acknowledge that, you know, this is a very personal decision for you, for your loved ones, for your family. And so, you know, we will begin this program by saying we absolutely respect that. And yet, if you feel so inclined, have a curiosity or wish to explore organ and tissue donation, we're super stoked to unpack that for you on this episode today. So, Dr. E, let's walk through, what are some of the organs and tissues that can be donated?
Yeah, so of course, it's easy to remember, you know, the big organs that we could certainly donate, like the heart, the kidney, the liver, the lungs. And if we could talk about two live donors, they can certainly be willing to donate maybe a kidney or a part of a liver or even bone marrow, for example. So these are, you know, and so let's think about the big organs that we can donate, even the pancreas, the intestines, bone or bone marrow. But then there are also things that we don't necessarily think about, right? Like we think about the big organs. We also think about corneas that could be donated. But me as a surgeon, I do a great deal of surgeries where I sometimes need, let's say, a bone graft or a tendon or something to augment some of my surgeries. That's something that we would get from an organ donor. So exactly, like bones for bone grafts to augment surgeries, even blood vessels to help with certain bypasses, cardiovascular bypasses, lower extremity bypasses, things like that. Artificial skin that we use on our patients to get wounds healed very quickly, and things like that. So you can't just think about, you know, these major big organs, but also a lot of other things. And that's why, like you said, 75 people could be benefiting from one organ donor, which is, it's very interesting. So keep in mind that they try not to waste anything. I will mention, though, that I remember specifically, and we'll tell the story about our mother and how she was just so interested in donating her organs. And we knew that as a child, you know. And when she did donate, apparently it was a completely separate entity to if you wanted to donate for research purposes. For example, if me as a medical student, you as a dental hygiene student, want to work on a cadaver or something like that, that's certainly an opportunity for you, but you would have to reach out to a certain entity to try to say that this is where I want my body to go to science. So I do remember that. And if we talk about the certain criteria to determine if a donor is actually suitable for organ and tissue donation, in fact, as we were doing our research, I found out that apparently 95% of the U.S. population is actually supportive of organ and tissue donation.
But that's only, amazing.
Right. And that's great. But only 58% of the population are actually registered. And maybe, you know, there are probably various reasons for that. Maybe they don't necessarily know how to register. Maybe they're confused about things. Maybe they're scared of certain part of the processes. So I guess a huge motivation for this episode, too, is to try to educate people. And if you are interested in becoming a donor, make sure you make those wishes clear and make sure you're doing the proper protocol so that we know. I will mention that, especially with, you know, with our mom, it made us feel very much at ease knowing that we did what she wanted us to do. And I think it even brought our family closer together. So just do make sure you make those wishes clear. So once we determined that someone is capable of becoming an organ donor, the terrible part is that only 3 out of 1,000 people who actually agree to be donors actually can be donors. So, you know, the odds are not that great in our favor. And I'm sure that the more we do our research, the more that we'll be able to have other reasons to try to get organs into other, you know, more readily available. I really hope so. So certain criteria, of course, the patient needs to be healthy. And there are certain criteria that the doctors determine. They cannot die of a viral infection. And then they also must die in the hospital, actually. Most common causes for a donor would be brain death. And if you, brain death is not, you know, it's really hard to think of, oh, you know, my loved one passed away and I can see their heart beating and I can see them breathing, but really they're breathing on a ventilator, right? But there are various things, and it usually requires two doctors to determine that the patient has brain death. And there are various things that they do to test the reflexes, test the eye function, test if they can experience pain. They even take the patient off the respirator to determine. So there's no real test to say, yep, this person has brain death. It's a clinical examination by two physicians. And I can tell you it's a very rigorous process. Once that person has determined that they are suitable for organ and tissue donation, I could tell you that they, and we could tell you from personal experience, that they go through a rigorous process to make sure. And it takes days. It takes days to prepare the body for organ and tissue donation. Maybe I'll kind of put it on over to you, Katrina, to because our family, this is something that's really near and dear to our family's heart. And of course, I have my stories and my input. But if you want to kind of share with the audience our family's story and why we're such big proponents of organ and tissue donation.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting that you kind of brought up early on in this segment, you know, making sure that you share your views or your requests with your loved ones. And I will say, you know, for those of you who have already walked through episode one with us, you know, of course, about the layers of tragedy that our family experienced. And yet, what I want to share, and this is why this episode is so important to us, is that the organ and tissue donation process was really a glimmer, a sparkle, you know, amongst the deep darkness that we all experienced in the sudden and tragic loss of Mom. Growing up, we knew that Mom wanted to donate her organs. You know, she was registered. She had the sticker on her driver's license. But she routinely said, didn't she? Like, when it's my time to go, take what you need, you know, give it to those who need it.
Well, she said it. And it's so funny. Dad was like surprised that we all knew.
That's what recited she said. It. Yep.
We'd
yep.
be in the minivan on the way to flute and clarinet lessons. And she'd be like, kids, this is what I want. But I am so thankful she was so clear about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Because that's the thing, is that when you're in, you know, some of the deepest, darkest layers, I mean, for Dad, you know, the doctor sitting down and saying she's not responding. She's trying to breathe on her own, but she would be in a vegetative state. She is in a state of, you know, a brain death. We don't foresee, you know, any miraculous modalities in bringing her back. You know, when you're in that dark place, that's a hard thing for a physician to then follow up with. And have you thought about organ and tissue donation? You know what I
yes,
mean? And
I
don't mean to laugh, but it's one of those things where it's like you're in this just dark place. And yet what's so beautiful about that is that when that came up for our family, it was like we all just had to take a pause and smile, because it was like, that's what she wanted. It is, period. It's what she wanted.
I remember Dad being like, wow, that's horrible. But what can we do to make my wife's wish come true? And that's what gave us a glimmer of hope.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I will say, I want to, you know, certainly lean on you for layers of this story and this process. But when Dad made the choice, you know, and of course, you know, signed all of that paperwork, you know, removing life-saving measures from somebody as the medical POA, like it's just as much paperwork as like buying a house and signing,
right,
you know, all of, so, you know, he signed all of that paperwork. And I will say that we grew up in a family of just giving, you know, I mean, that's just what you did. So you give whatever you can. So it was just a trajectory or natural process for our family that Dad was going to sign those pieces over. And when he did, the physicians made a few things available to us as a donor family or family members of a donor. They made it very clear that their decision or their diagnoses of brain death was not dependent on the fact that she was an organ donor. So there are a lot of fears that people have of, well, if I'm an organ donor, then doctors are just going to give up on me. They're not going to, you know, revive me. They're not going to perform CPR if, you know, that's necessary or whatever. That is not the case. The conversation about organ and tissue donation occurs after that diagnosis occurs. And that's when they ask. And so, you know, we were able to walk through that process.
That's exactly right. And I'm glad you mentioned that mm-hmm. we, you know, if a patient comes in, they're going to get the best medical care absolutely possible. And it, you know, it's not dependent on whether you are an organ donor or not. You will get the best care until it is determined. Then we will find out if you are an organ donor. So I'm so glad you mentioned that.
Yeah. So would you walk us through what happened in the hospital that day?
Yeah, well, I'm going to be honest, because Mom made it very, very clear to us that this is what she wanted, this made it it made it much easier on our family. So what we did was the doctor say, okay, well, we're going to do our best and to harvest whatever organs you want. And we made it very clear that we wanted to donate whatever possible because that was our mother's wish. So what we do is we say that, and they say, okay, absolutely, that's appropriate. And I also want to make it very clear, too, that once it was the Wisconsin organ and tissue donation founding people who came, and they actually came to the hospital, spoke with us, and described everything, they do take over the medical bills. So once it's determined that she was brain dead, they took over everything. So do understand that it is no cost to the family going forward. So don't think that to your loved ones that you're going to be a financial burden, because it does require a lot of processes. There are biopsies that need to be done. She needs to be on life supportive measures during the time. So I believe it did take about 3 days, and then they do coordinate for a harvesting team to come. So, and they come on a certain day, and the process does take a little while. And I will tell you that the surgeons and the nurses on the team were the most humble and understanding team that you will ever meet. Of course, we could talk about the nurses and how honored they were just to treat our mother. She had two or three nurses. I think she actually had three nurses assigned to her because she was such an important person, you know. The nurses just treated her with so much respect. They played music for her. They did her hair. They did her nails. They made her look beautiful. And then on the day of the organ and tissue donation, the surgeons all introduced themselves and they asked us about Mom, and they wanted to know everything about her. And they were very calm. They said, there's no, you know, no rush or anything. We're here to honor Linda and to honor the people whose lives she will be touching. They actually hung up a flag in front of the hospital in her honor. And I didn't know that this would happen, to be quite honest, is that as we, as our mom went down the hallway in the bed, that everyone lined up. And I'm telling you, this was the longest line of people that you would ever see. Like, you would turn, you would see, oh, okay, there are a few people lined up. And then as we would go and follow our mom's bed, that there were everyone from the whole hospital, the nurses, the staff, everyone was just lined up, just honoring, and you could tell that they were so privileged and so honored to be a part of that. And then they all just wanted to hear about our mom. So we just read this already prepared thing about mom, and we all wrote it together, right? And the doctors wanted that. The doctors wanted us to prepare music that she would love to listen to, and they played it in the operating room. The doctors wanted us to prepare something to read before their time out about mom so that they could know about her. So I have to tell you that we felt the most respect and very, very honored to be a part of her family. So I want you to be very aware, and this is, you know, deceased donors, but you'll be treated with great respect. And again, no cost to your family, so don't think it's a burden.
I want to just interrupt really fast because I what you had shared, they call it the final pause.
That's right.
Right? So she came in. Physicians take a final pause, and that is when they had asked us to prepare a statement, something to be read over her body before they began the harvest. And that's when we put together, we put it in mom's words, you know, hello physicians, hello, you know, nurses, hello MAs, thank you for being here today. I'm getting a little choked up. You know, thank you for being here today and being a part of this. But what was so sweet that Dad said was they had asked for a CD of songs to play for mom during the surgery. And Dad said that the first song that he wanted was Stairway to Heaven. And so as she went through, the surgery doors opened up and Stairway to Heaven played, which is just so beautiful. You know what I mean? It's to experience such deep tragedy like that, and yet to just feel that deep sense of peace in knowing that in her last moments on this earth, you know, even in her death, that she was able to serve and give and support. And again, I want to be respectful to the people listening to this in which their cultural or religious beliefs, you know, do not permit them to do so. I'm empathetic to that and I understand that, but what a beautiful way to leave this world. And just what a touching piece. From there, you know, Dad was invited to several, you know, governor's lunches and things like that, that the state of Wisconsin does such a beautiful job of honoring organ and tissue donors. They have, and I know this is state by state, so we're speaking just based on our experience in Wisconsin, but I know that there are states, you know, across the U.S. that have such beautiful programs to allow families of donors to get together and to be able to celebrate those gifts.
And I apologize. I also want to mention that, so especially in our mom's case, she donated organs to save lives, but she was also able to donate her lungs to the University of Wisconsin to participate in research for lungs. And I know she was supposed to be serving for one particular research process, but then because of COVID, now the research project changed, and instead her lungs are being used for COVID research purposes, which we're just so humbled.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And I do want to specify just other maybe myths that certainly if she was to donate her organs, and if anyone wants an open body casket, that's something that can be done. So for your knowledge, that's something that can be done. And also something that was very nice was we were able to get in touch with the families who received the organs. So they're very strict about that. You know, you write a letter with, let's say I want to write a card to the organ recipient. I can write a letter, but with no identifying factors. And with the process, if they want to reach out and if they want to know anything, as long as we also want to reach out and mm-hmm. know anything, then they'll put us in touch. So they were very nice about it. Again, very probably strict about it being in Wisconsin as well.
Sure. Yeah, that's beautiful. That's absolutely beautiful. And I do think that those are the components that even on the back end, like I remember Dad received a letter from the gentleman who received mom's kidney. I think the gentleman received actually both of her kidneys because he was very sick, and they said he needed both. And he received it, and he wrote this beautiful letter saying, like, I got to have Christmas with my family. Like, we did not think that that was, you know, going to be possible. So what a beautiful thing. And in addition, she gave her corneas. So, you know, people are able to see because of her gifts. I will say the one piece that Dad was a bit disappointed in is because she was over the age of 60 when she passed. Mom was 62. Because she was over the age of 60, we could not donate her heart muscle. But, you know, as we said to Dad, her heart was his all along. Not anyone else's.
And it was too big for anyone else.
Too big. So we absolutely love and appreciate that. I want to walk through the dental implications for organ and tissue recipients really quickly, because I actually, ironically, after Mom's experience, I was in clinical practice about 2 weeks later, and I had a patient who had experienced some very severe liver disease as a youth. Like, she was like 19 or 20 and had, you know, this wasn't you know, lifestyle afflicted. This was like some just horrific genetic issue. And she is a recipient of a few lobes of someone's liver. And she was kind of one of those patients that was a bit like rough around the edges, you know what I mean? No emotion. She, you know what I mean? Like,
she has to be,
out, you know,
though, right?
Sure. You know, I mean,
you've
you know,
been through all that.
She's been through a lot, you know. So she was just very, very grim, you know, her, she, even that kind of grim energy preceded her. Like, in the morning huddle, we're like, oh, this gal's coming in. She's not very nice. She's just in and out. She's very, you know, to the point. And so it was my first time seeing her, and she came in, and, you know, I asked her a little bit about, you know, some of the, you know, steps in the organ recipient process. And then I shared with her, you know, my mom passed away 2 weeks ago, and she was a donor. And I will say, it was amazing. Something just switched in that woman. She just immediately became a different person. And she just looked at me, and she just started tearing up. And she just said, thank you so much for doing that, for giving. It humanized her, of course, as one would expect. But, you know, she had a son, and she's like, I wouldn't be here today. This little boy wouldn't be here if, you know, those gifts, you know, weren't in my life. And so it's so beautiful. So we do see patients that are organ and tissue recipients. A few things that I do want to clarify. Good oral hygiene is critical for these individuals. Keep in mind, a lot of these individuals are experiencing either single or multi-organ failure in many of these cases. And so these are individuals where they're already likely immunocompromised. But we know that oral hygiene is critical. In fact, when I was a student at the University of Minnesota, we used to perform, you know, active debridement on patients right before they were about to receive. Like, they would get the call, like, oh, we've got an organ, and, you know, it'll be the next day or so. And they would come in, and we would do an active debridement on those individuals right in the moment, so that their oral cavity was as sterile as you can get it. We know you can't have a completely sterile oral cavity, but we did everything we could to get them as close as possible to having an infection and inflammation-free periodontium. No decay, to really make sure that these individuals were safe for this recipient surgery.
Wow, isn't that great?
Isn't that amazing?
That makes so much sense, though, if you think about it.
Mm-hmm. We also see that really the critical period for a transplant is within the first 6 months of receiving the organ or the tissue. This is when they really recommend no elective dental work, including debridements, including, you know, periodontal treatment. Of course, if there's something that's extremely emergent, if there's an infection that forms, of course they want us to address that. But they even put hygiene visits into the category of elective within that critical period, just because of course, the concern of bacteremia. So the American Heart Association, the American Medical Association recommend no elective dental work or hygiene services within the first 6 months following a transplant. After those 6 months, then absolutely seek routine exams and hygiene visits. The American Heart Association and the American Medical Association do recommend providing a superdose of antibiotics. So in the dental community, that's 2,000 milligrams of amoxicillin or 600 milligrams of clindamycin if they have an amox allergy. But they really encourage the patient to be in direct communication with their transplant coordinator to ensure that they're taking the appropriate antibiotics, that may be necessary. So it really is patient by patient specific, depending on how the patient responded to the transplant. These patients are also, by the way, oftentimes on various types of anti-rejection medications, cyclosporins, et cetera, where we know that tissue hyperplasia or tissue overgrowth is a very common observation. So these are patients that, even though the replacement of an organ can really improve the outcome of their life and, help shift them, they still are in an immunocompromised status, and they are taking medications that will suppress their immune system. So if these are individuals that get sick, we could, certainly see these individuals, starting to experience a deep drain on their immune system. Which I think is a really critical component for us to understand in the dental community. Patients that are recipients, these are individuals that we should be actively monitoring. If we're seeing any infection, inflammation, disease in the oral cavity, that we are prudent with these particular individuals.
Or even someone on the list or considering receiving. 100%. That makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. And I had the benefit, because I got to do a residency, I had the benefit of working up some of these patients. Here I was as a first-year podiatry resident. Oh, here, man. I am on my transplant rotation, and I'm the one who gets to see our recipient. And it's a crazy protocol. So, like, once, and there's a complicated process to know if you're an organ recipient, right? So you get a phone call, because you're on the list, and you're like, you better be here in 6 hours. If not, you lose your organ.
Goes to the next,
right?
Person.
And yeah. The amount of excitement and joy in that patient, it's unbelievable and not something I'll ever forget. But here I am, like, doing the H&P. I'm like, okay, your surgery's going to be tonight at midnight, and I'm doing their H&P. But there are certain things that you have to look for, right? And the whole process is very complicated with whether you get matched, right? So of course you're on the list, and it really depends on the type of organ as well, whether it's the kidney, for example, if it's a kidney, if you were already a donor or already a donor recipient, that kind of puts you up a little bit. Of course, knowing your blood type, your height, your weight, pediatric status. So if you're a pediatric patient, you're obviously higher on the list. That makes a lot of sense. The medical urgency, how long you've been on the list. Distance actually from the donor hospital is very important as well, right? So all of this, there's a whole factor of events just to optimize that the organ that you are accepting is going to be properly accepted. And then the whole postoperative protocol, I really think that's interesting that you talked about the dental debridements after. I think that's very important. And I even think about, what if we should be doing that beforehand during the 6 hours before they're accepting their organ? Wouldn't that be so interesting?
Wow. What a cool thing for hygienists to be able to. I'm sure there are hygienists out there that just perked up and thought, like, oh, I'd love to be a part of it. Just because that's really, where we want to get we want to be involved. You know what I mean? So yeah, how amazing would that be?
Yeah. Yeah, very, very interesting. And then the whole postoperative protocol, like you talked about, these patients are on immunosuppressives. They're for long term, sometimes antibiotics like Bactrim for really long periods of time, just to really avoid any withdrawal from the organ or declination, very interesting. So, Katrina, let's say I'm very interested in becoming a donor. How would I become a donor?
Yeah, so there are a few ways. You first should consider joining your donor registry, and we will make sure in the show notes that we include some links to LifeBank or Donate Life. Those are the two major entities to make sure that you are registered. You can also carry a donor card with you. Of course, we know, like, down at the DMV or MVD, whatever the Department of Motor Vehicles is in your state, registering there as well to, certainly indicate your wishes. that we know gets published right on your driver's license, or you get a sticker to indicate as such. But really the critical component is making sure that the people in your circle know. So this could be your healthcare provider, your attorney, your state attorney, you know, your religious leader, and your family, your loved ones, your medical POA. You know, those are the individuals. And I will say it, you know, if you're registered, they will honor your request, but it just adds such a beautiful layer for your loved ones, the people who care about you most, to know that this is something that matters to you, because in your passing, it just makes it so beautiful for them to be able to honor that request for you and know that it was something that was important to you. So I encourage those of you who were touched by this story. I know after Mom's story, I had so many people reach out to me and say, I double checked to make sure that I was a donor. Yes. I, you know, put it in my, you know, living will, my trust, you know, whatever that may be. I made sure that my loved ones knew after hearing that story. And so if one person hears this episode, I hope there are more, but one person hears this episode and is encouraged to, you know, want to make their wishes known to their family and friends and loved ones, then gosh, our work here is done. We did it, which is so beautiful. And really, we didn't do it. This is Mom's story.
That's right.
And one that Dad was such an incredible champion for.
And it brought our family together.
I know it did. Yeah, absolutely. It brought us together. So we participate when we can in, you know, the state of Wisconsin organ and tissue donation 5K, you know, running in honor of Mom, raising funds in honor of Mom. Dr. E, you and I have done, you know, programs and, you know, taken the proceeds from those continuing education courses and donated it back to Wisconsin in Mom's name. I have a keynote about Mom's passing, and I take 100% of the proceeds from that keynote and I send that to Wisconsin. That we this matters to us. Mm-hmm. This is a cause that is near and dear to our hearts, and it has just meant the world that we've been able to share Mom's story with all of you today. So with that, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Floss and Flip Flops with the Sanders Sisters, produced by Kristen Homan and brought to you by our friends at Modern Hygienist. Join us next time as we brush up on more oral systemic content.
We promise to keep you on your toes.
We do. Cheers.
Thank you for joining us for another monthly episode of Floss and Flip Flops with the Sanders Sisters.
Thank you for being part of the change we need to see in the medical and dental professions.
Join us next month for another sister-to-sister chat about other unique, interesting, and perhaps provocative and disruptive health topics.
Don't forget to like and subscribe, and maybe even leave a fabulous review.
And we'll catch you next month for another episode of
Floss and Flip Flops
with the Sanders Sisters.
I love you, Kinka.
I love you, Izzy.